I love to spend each Sunday with you. Ask friend of friend, I'm sorry it's true. I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope you feel that way.
And he never had a great voice in the Jolson manner, for instance, but he sold a song, and he had enthusiasm. He had sparkle. I think that's a great word for Eddie.
And after all is said and done, there is really only one. Oh, Margie, Margie, it's you. Out in public, she's meek and mild. But in the parlor, mother dear, come save your child. If you knew Susie like I know Susie. Oh, oh, what a girl.
Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Well, well, look at that baby. Do tell, don't say maybe. Nell's bells, won't she cause some row? Pretty soon, we will hear that low and grim tune. Should she be, sir? No one else but me, sir. Yes, sir, that's my baby now.
The banjo eyes, which is what they called him, you know, because he had big, bulging eyes, and I think it was from endocrine condition of some kind, which he never bothered with because it became a trademark for him. Would overwhelm an audience with his jumping and dancing and singing wildly, and they would just rise to enthusiasm with him. And he learned early the secret of the big finish.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we'd like to pay tribute to an actor, yes? Actor, producer, playwright, singer, dancer, songwriter, and great American, George M. Cohan. The theatergoers of yesterday thrilled at the sight of a sandy-haired, blue-eyed young Irishman with a hat rakishly set on one side of his head as he sang the song that came not only from his pen, but from his heart. He was born on the 4th of July, and even as a kid, he waved the flag because he loved it. He never stopped waving it. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, George M. Cohan gave our flag a permanent wave. Here are some of the songs which you might want to remember and which your mothers and fathers will never forget. I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy, a Yankee Doodle do or die, a real live nephew of my Uncle Sam's, born on the 4th of July. I'm a Yankee Doodle sweetheart, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle came to London just to ride the ponies. I am a Yankee Doodle boy. H-A-double-R-I, G-A-N spelled Harrigan. Out of all the Irish mothers in me, and the dibble a man can say a word to give me. H-A-double-R-I, G-A-N-U-C-E. Is the name that the shame never has been connected with. That's me. George M. Cohan loved the name of Mary. He made the public love it too. He always had one song about Mary in every one of his shows. Listen to this one from 45 Minutes from Broadway.
For it is Mary, Mary, plain as any name can be.
But with propriety, society will say Mary, but it was Mary, Mary, long before the fashion came, and there is something there that sounds
And from little Johnny Jones,
give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Hello, the gang at 42nd Street, and I will soon be there.
You're a grand old man, you're a high man.
And forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats on the red, white, and blue, where there's never a boast or brag.
But you hold the grave and speed, forgotten seat you ride on the red.
Daughter of Officer Kelly,
and it's all day long
they bring flowers all dripping with dew, and they join in the chorus of Nelly, Kelly, and I love you.
Our most prominent songwriters of today will agree that the song for this war has not yet been written. Perhaps it may still be written by George M. Cohan, the man who wrote the great song of the last war. All the songs you've just heard are in the new Warner Brothers picture, Yankee Doodle Dandy. Next week, we'll be broadcasting from Camp Hahn near Riverside, California. And our special guest will be the very glamorous Veronica Lake. And so until then, remember, I love the Sam.
And not only that, he learned from George M. Cohan the value of flag waving. And this was most important. He became a master at this, and it did a lot of good and does a lot of good. I think we can use more of it today. I think not as many people have the full feeling of pride in their country as they used to.
Down through the countless ages, you'll find it everywhere. Somebody makes good wages. Somebody wants her share. She calls them toodles and rolls her eyes. She makes them strudels and bakes them pies. What is it all for? It's so he'll fall for. Another year, or maybe less. What's this I hear? Well, can't you guess? She feels neglected, and he is suspected of making whoopee. She sits alone most every night. He doesn't phone or even write. He says he's busy, but she says, is he? He's making whoopee. He doesn't make much money, $5,000 per. Some judge who thinks he's funny says you'll pay six to her. He says, now judge, suppose I fail. The judge says, bud, right into jail. You'd better keep her. You'll find it's cheaper than making whoopee.
Don't forget, Eddie's songs would come from shows. He was featured and starred at the Winter Garden and at Ziegfeld in so many shows. Not all of his songs came from shows, but he would popularize in a single show. Making Whoopee, for instance, was in a show called Whoopee. And the first record would be his record, you see, and it would be the biggest. And people all over the country would buy these records. He had great numbers of records. But the record business was different then than it is now.
Either sweet as apple, apple, sakwa whiter. Sweeter than all that I know. Oh, oh, oh. Come out in the silvery moonlight. Our love will whisper so soft and low. Can't you hear me calling? Seems though can't live without you. Listen, my honeydew. Ida, kinda idolize ya. I long to love ya, Ida, deed I do. Ida, come closer to me. I'd like to talk to you. You know, Ida, this has been more than just lyrics and music to me. This has been my theme song from the day we met, more than 50 years ago. Remember how long we were engaged? 7 years. You see, it cost $2 for a marriage license. You had your dollar, but it took me 7 years to dig up mine. But we finally did get married. And what lovely wedding presents. Oh, a rubber plant, a 26-piece set of silver from Jack Benny. That's right. He sent $2.60 in dimes. And someone gave us a baby carriage. I looked at the carriage and said, now what am I going to do with that? Little did I know. In 1914, I wasn't earning more than 35 bucks a week. But then the dollar was worth something. Eggs were 15 cents a dozen, and the friendly butcher would throw in a piece of liver for the cat, which the cat never got. You ate it yourself. Nowadays, you go to one of the swanky restaurants in Hollywood, and a portion of liver costs $3.50. When we were first married, there wasn't a man alive who could lift $3.50 worth of liver. Ah, we've been tremendously happy through all the years. You have given me 5 lovely daughters. You've been a wonderful companion, a loving mother, and a good wife. You have given me everything a man could possibly ask for. Well, that is, well, not everything. There's something you failed to give me. But it's not too late, Ida. Really, it's not. When? Tell me when. When are you going to learn to make a good cup of coffee? Huh? Tell me. Ida, kinda idolize ya. I long to love ya, Ida, deed I do.
Eddie Cantor was the first man I ever wrote radio material for, and for that I loved him. He was the star who brought the famous Chase and Sanborn Coffee Hour to life, and he was the man who made it forever famous in radio history.
Carol Carroll is one of the country's best comedy writers, and he was associated with Eddie Cantor for many years. He is also author of None of Your Business, My Life with J. Walter Thompson, or The Confessions of a Renegade Radio Writer. The book makes excellent reading. Carroll's memories of Eddie Cantor make excellent listening.
My relation with Eddie was a rather in-and-out affair right from the start. First, I wrote for him off and on. Then, when I was asked to write regularly for the show, I figured I was in. When I listened to the broadcast, I found the stuff I'd written was out. But I got used to it. This was par for the course with Cantor. Material it was paid for, he frequently didn't use. And frequently, the material he used wasn't worth what he paid for it. An interesting thing about Eddie and me is that the further apart we drifted, the closer we became. One of Eddie's problems was that he couldn't be properly pragmatic about the mechanics of broadcasting. To ask him to cut a joke was like asking him to cut his throat. For instance, after about the third Burns and Allen broadcast, George Burns became thoroughly reconciled to cutting. He'd say, well, that's just that much. We don't have to write next week. Cannon never got to that point. The producer of the Chase and Sanborn show, when Eddie did it, was an absolutely unflappable New Englander named Abbott K. Spencer. Spence made Parker Fennelly's Titus Moody sound like a chatterbox. One day I heard a conversation between Spence and Fennelly that was so dry it nearly blew away. Well, anyway, at the end of a rehearsal on Sunday afternoon, Spence might say to Eddie, Eddie, we have to cut about 14 minutes. This was like pouring boiling water on Cantor's instant rage. Are you crazy? He'd scream. Cut Rubinoff. Take away his fiddle. Break it. Fire him. This didn't bother Spence. He was a whittler. Whittlers don't mind listening and they don't mind waiting. So he'd just mentally whittle for a while and then say dryly, Carol's got some cuts. Cantor would react as if my cuts had touched his jugular vein. He'd make outrageous suggestions such as cut all the commercials. But little by little, Spencer would whittle away the overmatter till we'd gotten it down to maybe 2 or 3 minutes. That's all, Cantor would say. That's all the cuts I'll make. I'll talk faster. I'll make it up. We settled. We knew he wouldn't talk faster. He never did. He always talked slower. But we always had a buffer at the end of the show, and Cantor never really knew how we got off the air on time. As I said, he never seemed to fully understand the mechanics of radio. He didn't believe people couldn't see him. He even made his first entrance every Sunday in costume.
He liked a lot of sight gags. He couldn't get used, even though he was on radio, he couldn't get used to working as if he was on a stage. I'll never forget one night as part of a joke, and I didn't know anything about it, he broke an egg over my head. Just cracked an egg and dropped it and let it dribble down over my face. I was the most surprised guy. The audience died, of course. And then he said a couple of words and explained it to the radio audience. I have countless numbers of times he used to jump up in my arms. He'd make a joke and he'd say, and I'd find him jumping and I'd grab him. And I'd worked so well with him by that time that was part of it, you know. They were wonderful experiences.
During the period I'm talking about, he had a Crosley rating. Crosley was the rating service at that time. He had a Crosley rating that showed he had over 50% of all the people listening to radio between 8 and 9 on Sunday evening. The percentage was so astounding that nobody believed it. So Crosley finally changed the system, and Cantor still came out as far ahead of the field as he'd been before. Because of this position of strength, he was a very hard man to argue with. You couldn't win. Let me give you an idea of what kind of listenership Cantor had. There was a mistake made in one of the coffee commercials. It said that Samuel Johnson drank 24 cups of coffee a day. The writer must have gotten this notion because Johnson hung around a spot called the Cheshire Cheese in London, which all us old-timers know is a coffee house. Before Jimmy Wallington had finished the 60-second commercial, phone calls were flooding the NBC switchboard to say that it was tea that Dr. Johnson drank. Made a big hit with the coffee people. But it was a big score for the smartness of the dumb radio listeners in those days. They were a group that Alexander Wilkett once told me wrote him the smartest letters he received from anywhere. Cantor liked money. Money was always the problem in his sort of quirt and flag relationship with his dear old pal, Georgie Jessel. Jessel felt money was to be enjoyed and spent, and he still does. Cantor didn't enjoy the way Jessel spent it. Eddie had it in mind to put sufficient money away for a rainy day so that he'd have enough to make a loan to Noah. People who lived in Los Angeles in the 30s will remember the ride out Sunset Boulevard from Union Station. There was a great big 24-sheet sign. I think it was around where the entrance to Chavez Ravine now is. And everybody that saw that sign as they passed read it out loud. I don't know why. One day, driving out to Santa Monica with Norma Talmadge, Jessel looked up and saw the sign and read, "Jesus saves." He then shook his head slowly and said, "Not like Cantor."
There were a lot of things that Eddie did that were so good. And he maintained a vigor, a youth. When I knew him to be in his middle 60s, he was as virile and as active, energetic, and as alert as any man 20 years younger.
Working with Eddie was a great hunk of schooling for me, because I was able, through the years that I was with him, to grab off the hard-won education that he had had all through the years from singing waiter on up, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating. I learned many things. I was very new at the time, and it led me to ask Eddie to help me with timing, because here I was getting laugh lines, you know, joke things. And I got a very interesting answer from Eddie. I said, "Eddie, read it for me and tell me how to time it." He says, "Nobody can tell you how to time it." He says, "You're going to have to feel it. And it'll come to you eventually. It's something that happens. It's different with every person, because you've got to adjust yourself to your audience. And when you get it," he says, "you'll know it. And I'll know it too." Because a couple of shows, the first two or three shows that I did with him as Rubinoff, my timing was off. I'd lose a few laughs that were written there. I didn't know how to do it. You know, I was quite young when I joined Eddie. And one day, about 4 months after I'd started the character, he says, "Now you got it." This was one of the big days of my life, I want to tell you. And I felt that I had it. I felt that I had learned from his suggestions, from observation, and from a feel inside, which he had said, of how to time. Timing was very important, and Eddie was a master at it. Of course, he had learned from his vaudeville days. In those days, you got out, and you had to feel an audience. Very often, vaudevillians would do the same jokes and the same act that they did for many years, but five different ways, and sometimes several different ways in one day. For instance, at a supper show, when there aren't as many people in the audience, they would hit harder because they didn't have enough people sitting around them to help build the laughs. The timing that Eddie had was built through years of playing vaudeville. And the chief thing that I learned from him, aside from the timing thing, which was the fact that when you hit an audience, you will not find two audiences alike, and you will have to gear yourself to them. You'll have a few test jokes if you're working in comedy. And if you see they don't go, you must try the next one a little different way. Maybe they have to be hit harder. Maybe they have to be hit softer. You can get the feel of an audience. And this was the first exposure that I'd had to that. And I saw Eddie would work differently than from one week to another when he felt the studio audience. After he was an established star with Ziegfeld, then he broke into radio. And at once, instead of having 1,200 people or 1,500 people a night see him, or if you add it up by eight performances, let's say 8,000 people a week, he was suddenly grabbed by millions of people. And I say, I mean grabbed, because when Eddie first went on, he was the top attraction for, I think, three solid years in a row. I guess he hit radio. I know he hit radio in 1931. Yeah, that was his beginning in with the Eddie Cantor Show. And I joined him a couple of years later.
We want Cantor.
We want Cantor. That's Blue Ribbon Blend and Blend. Bring to Eddie Cantor.
Gentlemen, tonight our guest stars are Jack Benny from the Lucky Strike program, from the Dinosaur Ford show, Peter Lind Hayes, from the Truth or Consequences show, Ralph Edwards, along with Margaret Whiting, Cookie Fairchild and his orchestra, and yours truly, Harry Von Zell, to bring you
the Eddie Cantor Fast Blue Ribbon Show.
Thank you. Hello, Harry. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Eddie. All right, gang. Here's your pitch. Let's go.
Happy birthday.
Surprise, and you did it in the key in which we rehearsed it, too. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Cookie, Harry, Margaret, and just think, Harry, at midnight tonight, I'll be 55.
55 years old. Yes, sir, Eddie, and all these years you've been giving the public the product of your talent. And today the product is as good as it ever was.
Thanks, Harry. The product may be as good as ever, but the package is a little frayed around the edges.
Oh, don't say that, Eddie. The sponsor seems to think you're all right. After all, he gave you that beautiful watch for your birthday.
Yeah, look at it, Harry.
I didn't see it. Hey, I never saw a watch with so many dials.
Yeah, you see, this dial tells you the hour, and this dial tells you the day.
Isn't that amazing? What is the other dial there for?
That tells you who's the governor of Georgia this week.
That's very nice. Say, I understand Jolson gave you a nice birthday present, Eddie.
Oh, Jolson, yeah. He didn't forget me, that sweet old man. Oh, yeah. Bless his tired old gray head. Gray. Lucky to have a head.
No. Listen, what's the trouble, Eddie? What did Jolson give you?
A convertible wheelchair.
A convertible wheelchair.
Yeah, when you put up the top, an oxygen tank. But, Harry, everybody's been grand. Just one thing spoiled it.
Oh, what was that?
I went up to NBC to ask them for a little favor on my birthday.
Yeah, well, what was the favor?
What was a little nothing? Asked them to turn me down.
What?
I just thought it would be nice on my birthday if between the programs, instead of saying, this is NBC, they should say, we want Canada. Is that much to ask for? On your birthday.
And for a little thing like that, they turned you down.
Harry Von Zell, I'm going to get even if it's the last thing I do.
What do you mean?
I've decided to go into business for myself. I'm going to have my own network.
I am. Well, Eddie, wait, there are a lot of things. Before you can have one radio station even, you've got to have a license from the government.
They'll give me a license. They need the taxes they'll get from my network. They have to support the Army and the Navy, and the country's got to have an Army and Navy. Otherwise, who would play against Notre Dame?
Oh, no. Eddie, owning a radio network is a very good idea, but where are you going to get all the money to finance it?
Harry, I'm forming a corporation, and all I need now is $500,000.
That's all.
And I know just the man who'll give it to me.
Who?
Jack Benny.
To get Jack out of Benny?
Oh,
for
Harry.
Yeah, Harry, don't laugh. Don't laugh. On his program, he's supposed to be stingy, but he's really generous.
He is?
I'll never forget when my first daughter was born. I was so poor, Harry. You know, Ida and I, we lived up in the Bronx.
I know, you told me. But...
I needed $50, and Jack loaned it to me, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And as soon as I gave him back the $50, he gave me back the baby. He did.
Oh, well, I believe you. Listen, doesn't Jack Benny know that that money won't go to heaven with him?
Listen, Harry, the way he's piling it up, it'll reach there before he does. Harry, maybe Jack is a little bit stingy. Did you ever notice how slowly and quietly he talks on the air?
Well, what's that?
That's not his character. He's tired, you know. Before each broadcast, he has to walk in from Glendale.
I don't understand. Jack doesn't live in Glendale.
I know, but that's the closest to the studio he can park his car free, you know.
Eddie, listen, that I refuse to believe even about Jack Benny.
Well, forget about Benny. Let's concentrate on my new NBC network. That's what I'm calling it, the NBC.
Listen, Eddie, you can't use the letters NBC. NBC stands for National Broadcasting
Company. From now on, it stands for nothing but canter. And another thing, Harry. Come in.
Hello, boys.
Hello, Jack. Jack, how are you?
My feet are killing me. You know, it's quite a hike from Glendale. Next week, I'm parking in Pasadena.
Well, Jack, Pasadena's farther than Glendale.
I know, Eddie, but it's downhill.
Jack, I can't understand you. Why don't you pay 25 cents and park your car right behind the studio? Is a quarter too much?
Oh, no, no, but it's such a bother making out a check each time. You know, I never carry that much cash with me, you know, with the hold-ups these days and everything.
Jack, Jack, how would you like
to... held up for quarter?
I know. For less. Jack,
what?
How would you like
to... quarter, you lose...
I know, you're talking...
Isn't the money, you
hey,
know.
I know it isn't.
Pardon me.
How would you like to park your car in the NBC parking lot for nothing?
Well, I always thought a quarter was too much there. Didn't you think so, Eddie?
Jack, I can fix it so you own the parking lot and collect all the money for yourself.
You mean I can keep all those half dollars?
Jack, it's a quarter.
50 cents. If they don't like it, let them park in Glendale. I got it. Why are you doing all this for me?
Out of friendship, Jack. After all, we practically started the radio together.
Up,
I know, Jack. You know, I remember your first radio date, Jack. You only got $25. You remember?
$30.
You got $25.
Wait here, Eddie. I'll go home and count it. I know it was $30.
Jack, look, I've got a business proposition for you. Something that will bring you a steady income and you won't have to work. After all, you're not getting any younger.
Well, you, Eddie, you're not getting any older either. You couldn't get any older.
Wait a minute, Jack. You and Al Jolson are always kidding about my age. Just how old are you?
Well, officially, I tell everyone I'm 37. No, but I can't lie to you, Eddie. I'm 32.
You look like that and you're 32?
Yes.
Jack, don't try for 64.
Never mind. Eddie, what is this proposition of yours?
Jack, how would you like to be a partner in one of the biggest radio networks?
Well.
And it only requires a very small investment on your part. $500,000. You see... Jack, speak to me. Jack, say something. His toupee turned white. Jack, say something.
Look, Dennis.
Jack, this is Eddie.
Oh. I mean, Eddie, I'm all mixed up now.
Jack, are you afraid?
Between this and getting held up.
I know, Jack. Are you afraid to invest $500,000?
Afraid to invest? I'm even afraid to say it.
But you shouldn't be. that way. After all, there are other things in life besides money.
Well, sir, there's cash, annuities, bonds, but... Eddie, don't you think a $500,000 is too much? I mean, can't we start smaller? We don't need a whole network right away.
Well, what'll we start with?
I don't know, a few tubes and some wire. the microphone can come later, you know.
But, Jack, you need a microphone to broadcast.
Not if you have a loud voice.
Jack, don't storm me. Owning a network would be the realization of all my dreams. Let me have that $500,000, won't you, Jack?
Look, Eddie, you've been a lifelong friend of mine, and I can't say no to you. I'll tell you what, call up my business manager, Mert Blum, at the Bank of America.
And he'll give me the $500,000.
No, he'll say no to you. I haven't got the heart. So long, Eddie.
So long, Jack. Don't worry, Harry. I'll raise the money. People will invest when they realize the great entertainment I have in store for them. Singers like Margaret Whiting, an orchestra like Cookie Fairchild, doing the songs people love, the old nostalgic tunes.
Like what, Eddie?
Like this. Yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now. Yes, ma'am, we've decided. No, ma'am, we won't hide it. Yes, ma'am, you're invited now. By the way, when we reach the preacher, I'll say, with feeling, yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't mean maybe. Yes, sir, that's my baby now.
Another milestone on memory lane was another baby song Margaret will explain.
Come to me, my melancholy baby. Cuddle up and don't be blue. All your fears are foolish fancy, maybe. You know, dear, that I'm in love with you. Every cloud must have a silver lining. Wait until the sun shines through. Smile, my honey dear, while I kiss away each tear, or else I shall be melancholy too.
Can we
our
audience melancholy? So, Eddie, please come back and make them jolly.
Yes, sir,
that's my baby. No, sir, don't
be
maybe.
Yes, sir, that's my baby now. By the way, when we reach the preacher, I'll say, with feeling, yes, sir, that's my baby. No, sir, don't be maybe.
Yes, sir, that's my baby now.
Eddie.
In looking over the radio networks, I found a way I can save a lot of money.
Oh.
Instead of hiring a different announcer for each program, I know a talented fellow who can do all the announcing for all the programs. He can replace four announcers.
Oh, Eddie.
And here he is, Peter Lind Hayes.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi, Harry.
So... You sound like four announcers rolled into one, huh?
What are you laughing at? You look like four announcers.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Harry. Don't be jealous. I didn't bring Pete here to replace you. I just want him to show you the type of announcers we don't want on our network. Go ahead, Pete, if you please.
Okay, Eddie. Well, let's see. First, there's the sweet, drippy type with the honeyed tones who sounds something like this.
Ladies over 300 pounds, are you fat? You dear girls, when you go into a drugstore to weigh yourself, is half of you still outside? Are you afraid to wear a midriff gown because your mid hangs over your riff? Well, ladies, why don't you just waddle to your neighborhood drugstore and purchase a box of no-fat? No-fat, the magic reducer, comes in three different strengths. Stout, slim, and where are you?
I I don't know what the network would do without that announcer, but we'd rather.
Eddie, how about the announcers on the news programs who camouflages his commercial and sneaks it in like this?
Ah, there's good news tonight. Yes, good news from the Philippines. Ah, yes. Because somewhere on that tropical isle, just as somewhere in these United States, someone is munching a Glockenspiel Frankfurter. Ah, friends, Glockenspiel Frankfurters are fresh. So fresh that you have to beat them with a stick to make them lie down in the roll. Indeed. And remember, folks, Glockenspiel's Frankfurters are smoked. So if you want to enjoy a good smoke, light up a Glockenspiel Frankfurter. And now to the news. Congress is in session. And now back to Glockenspiel's Frankfurter. Friends, accept no substitutes. And now back to the news. The news about Glockenspiel's Frankfurters. Remember our slogan, Glockenspiel Frankfurters are manufactured unseen by human eyes, untouched by human hands, and unfit for human consumption.
I know that Eddie did this. I know that he did a tremendous amount of charity in his lifetime. He, he founded the March of Dimes, but that's only a small thing compared to the number of institutions where he'd organize shows and raise hundreds of thousands of dollars for one charity after another. I had a great fondness for Eddie. I lost it for a short time and gained it back again. The moment I lost it was an interesting one. Eddie, as you know, had been a Ziegfeld star, and Ziegfeld had taken him from his rise in vaudeville and put him into the Ziegfeld Follies, and he became truly a big, big star, and Ziegfeld eventually starred him in his own show. Eddie owed a lot to Ziegfeld. He truly, of more than any individual, was responsible for Eddie's great rise. Well, we were on the air as Ziegfeld passed away, and Eddie had written a scene which was Ziegfeld's death scene. The new Ziegfeld Theater was being built 54th Street and 6th Avenue in New York, and it was in its final stages of construction. Everything was almost ready. They weren't ready to open the house, but the building was erected. And Ziegfeld was in a room at the Warwick Hotel, directly across the street from the theater. And alone with him in the room was Sidney, his valet, who was with him at the end. Sidney had been with him a great number of years. Well, Eddie wrote a very dramatic scene, which I played with him on the Eddie Cantor Show radio. I played Sidney, and Eddie, of course, played Ziegfeld. And it was a scene that had one or two breakdowns on Eddie's part during the scene. It looked like he couldn't go on with it. His voice clouded up. I certainly believe it was very sincere, because he did owe this man a great deal. The scene was played to its end, a very soft, dramatic finish. We walked off very slowly. Music was playing softly under the thing. The audience had burst into tremendous applause. It was a big hit. It took them a second to realize that it was over, and that hush, you know, that comes after a dramatic thing, and then applause broke. And Eddie was crying, and I was crying. But as I often tell people, I cry at wrestling matches and roller derbies. I have my tears are near the surface. But I believe that Eddie was... It happened to him just as it happened to me. And we were walking off stage. Eddie was toward the audience and had a handkerchief to his face. And with his upstage eye looking at me, he winked and made a facial expression as if to say, we certainly killed him, didn't we, buddy? Well, this shocked me. It shocked me terribly, because I truly believed that the man was on the verge of collapse, and here this thing came. And I don't know to this day whether he did that because he was self-conscious about crying and wanted to try to break the thing in some way. And it shocked the heck out of me. I was young and impressionable, and Eddie Cantor was a god to me, and this was the first... earth-like thing that he did. It broke down. In later years, of course, I gained back my respect, and I might even say my love for him in some respects. He was a very warm human being.
In 1964, when I started to put together Chasen Sandburn's 100th anniversary radio show, incidentally, the recording of that show has become a collector's item, I couldn't find an air check in NBC's file of Eddie singing his theme, "I Love to Spend This Hour with You." I figured Eddie must have one, so I wrote and asked him to lend it to me. There were plenty of regular commercial records of the song, but I wanted the real thing from the air, and I never got it. Eddie didn't have an air check either and didn't know where to get one. So he went into a studio with a pianist and did the song specially for me. Incidentally, he made a mistake in the lyric. He sings, "Let's make a date for some other night." That's the way he sang it some years later. On the Chasen Sandburn show, he sang, "Let's make a date for next Sunday night." Anyway, that recording that he made in 1964 is undoubtedly the last one Eddie ever did. And what you'll hear next is a tape made from that precious acetate that he sent me in 1964.
I love to spend this hour with you, as friend to friend. I'm sorry it's through, I'm telling you just how I feel. I hope you feel that way too. Let's make a date for some other night. I'm here to state will be my delight to sing again, bring again the things you want me to. I love to spend this hour with you.
Reminiscing, I feel you near. Once more, you're my love of yesteryear.
With us next week for another nostalgic look at radio of yesteryear.
And now it's just about time we were picking up our memories and moving along our way. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these songs and the memories that go with them as much as I've enjoyed bringing them to you. And I'll be keeping my weather eye peeled, yes sir, looking for you all to join us the next time we drop around this way for a friendly little get-together. And I hope that'll be real soon, folks. And until then, this is your old friend Singin' Sam saying goodbye for now.
Same Time, Same Station is produced for KRLA News and Public Affairs by John Price. Associate producer, Cam Currier. Special research by Martin Halpern. I'm Bill Browning. Our thanks to Harry Von Zell, Carol Carroll, and Alan Reed for their appearances tonight.
Be sure to be with us next week at this same time, same station.